Welcome to Hype, episode 186. My name is Selena, and I am joined once again by Pam for another week of exciting entertainment news stories. Hello!
Hi!
How are you doing on this fine Wednesday evening?
I'm doing great. It's starting to heat up out here in Northern California, so that's kind of interesting. This is a time of year where I have to take layers off and turn off the fans before we hit record. So I like winter because I can cozy up in my, you know, faux fur throw podcast from undercovers.
We've had absolutely amazing weather in Copenhagen for like a couple of weeks now. It's pretty insane. Like, it's just been free of clouds, hot. I've been spending way too much time on my balcony because I can, and it's nice, and I can escape from the computer for a little bit. But I don't know if you feel this because you live in California, so you don't have as much like different weather. But I get so used to like one kind of weather. And then I'm like, when it changes, I always like, what is happening? Like, whether it's summer or winter or rain or like whatever, it's so stupid.
Well, we definitely don't have like seasons. Like, we don't get snow, but it does get like, it's not perpetual summer up here in the north like it is in Southern California. So it is a bit of a drastic change to go between like all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's really cold and then it's like somebody turned up the heat and forgot to turn it off. So it literally just like happens overnight. But it's funny you mentioned going outside because I was catching up on some CW shows, which we will talk about later. And they kept like playing the same ad, you know, like when you watch shows back on the CW website online, they just kind of try and cater ads to you, right? Because they want you to like buy the things. And the ad that kept playing every single time was this one for Claritin, which is the allergy medicine out here. And they're like, Claritin wants you to take the 20 minutes outside challenge this spring. Like, spend 20 minutes outside. I'm like, Claritin, are you trying to attack my way of life where I just like don't leave the house? Like, I know that I never go outside. Please do not rub it in. I just want to watch The Hundred in Peace.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's like, maybe you should try going outside. I was like, maybe you should just keep your opinions to yourself. Personally attacked this afternoon, you guys.
This is why ads are bad.
Yeah, it's because they know I'd never leave the house.
Yes, how dare they?
I'm working on my moon tan, didn't you know?
Anyway, this is not about... this is not about the weather. This is Hype. Wink, wink. And we have a lot to get into this week. But before we do, as always, we want to remind you of the Comic-Con, I was just going to say. We do want to remind you that Comic-Con exists, but we also want to remind you of the contact information. If you want to leave us feedback, which we love, we have some feedback towards the end of the show, and we absolutely like this podcast, you know, is a conversation with the listeners. So if you have anything you want to contribute or anything you want to recommend to us that you've seen that we haven't seen, or if we have a trash opinion and you have a better one, then please let us know. You can tweet us at HypeableHype and you can email us hype@hypeable.com. Those are really the primary ways for you to submit your feedback. You can also follow us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at hypeablehype. And of course, you can visit Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com, and you can find our podcast information on there as well as all the news stories that we talk about. All right, so moving into how we hype now, Pam, you are hyping something that is very much up in the conversation, so let's start by talking about that.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Donald Glover. Of course, he's a man of many talents, but one of the things that he is very well known for is making music under the name Childish Gambino. Now, he was up for a bunch of awards for his last debut album, Awaken My Love, but he's back at it again, and he actually hosted SNL this past week where he debuted a new song called This Is America. And the performance was really great, but what everybody's really talking about right now is the music video that he released simultaneously with the performance. If you have not seen this music video, I think we'll link to it in the show notes. It's amazing, but also really hard to watch. Like, I think if violence disturbs you, like, this does not hold back on pulling punches. And, you know, he's painting a very bleak picture of what the world looks like today, but it is, you know, centered around conversations that we need to be having right now, whether that be, you know, gun control and gun violence, and like violence in general. And there's just like so much to unpack here. But I've seen this music video so many times because I feel like every time I watch it, I walk away with something different. And I know that you watched it right before we recorded, so I wanted to know what you thought about it too.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, this is a really powerful, important video. Like, I love how artists like Childish Gambino are using their art to sort of comment on the state of America right now, and especially the state of America for Black people, because you see, like, when you read the news, it sounds so unbelievable, you know? Like, it literally sounds like it cannot possibly be true, some of the stuff you read, you know, coming out of America at the moment. So I think that just having something so starkly acknowledge and show and force people to talk about what is actually happening is so important. And I thought this one did such a fantastic job. It was such a good, stark, sort of disturbing, his little like wild smile dancing mixed with the coldness in his face, like when he switches to like using the gun and stuff, like it's so evocative. I think I was thinking it's like it reminds me a lot of, I don't remember which one, but there's a Michael Jackson music video that is kind of like also set in a warehouse that it really reminds me of sort of visually, which I thought was really sort of interesting. But I think it's I can see why. And it's funny, it's not funny at all, but kind of like before I watched the video, the only screen cap of it I'd seen was like one of his, like him smiling. So I was like, why is everyone saying like, why is this so important? He's just, like, he's happy, like what's happening? But obviously that was completely out of context of the video. I think it's really, really evocative.
Yeah, and there's like so much like imagery there, like historical context as well. His like crazy little dance that you're talking about, or like the perpetual smile on his face, was very reminiscent to me of like Ragtime, which was, you know, back in the 1920s, these caricatures that, originated from blackface, or that Black people used to have to portray, like Mammy and Aunt Jemima and Jim Crow and stuff like that. These were all like caricatures of Black people, and the fact that he kind of like used that to serve as a symbolism for, you know, maybe like how there's still vestigial remnants of those chains of oppression, and like there's still real oppression too, but there's a lot of like mental oppression that the Black community still kind of struggles with, and just like turning a blind eye. That's like a big theme throughout the course of the video too, just like all of this death and destruction and violence going on, and like school children are still dancing because, like, you know, it's like we're so desensitized to it almost, that it's almost like it doesn't matter when it's happening right in front of you.
But
it's definitely worth a watch. And also, like, I keep trying to figure out a way to bring this up, but like bigger and bigger stuff keeps coming out. But if you're looking for more like amazing artists that are doing a lot of like activism within their work, highly, highly, highly recommend Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer album, which came out a few weeks ago. It's not rap. It's actually like the melody is a lot of like really bright synth pop. So if you're looking just for something that's like really, really pleasant to the ears, that's going to take you from spring to summer, like, this is like the album for you. But also, if you take like a deeper look into some of the songs, like all of the songs, actually, like the entire album is just like this one cohesive narrative. And she talks about, you know, being like pansexual, and also like the oppression that she's felt being a Black woman in America, and like how she's like coped through that and gone through that. There's a lot of like feminism in here. And it's just like a wonderful, wonderful album. And I highly recommend that too, if you're really into this artistry that's really using music as a platform to talk about and shed light on really important social issues and conversations that we should be having.
All right. I'm downloading it right now. I can't wait to listen.
Yay!
To it.
I'm so excited.
She's so great.
Yeah, she's really good, and like the singles are really good, and like, you know, she got a lot of attention for her Pink music video specifically because of her crazy pants and stuff. But but the whole album, it's like worth listening to from like start to finish, you know, in order and stuff like that, because I think it really kind of shines as like a whole piece, body of work. So
yeah, awesome. All right, so my How We Hype is a little very different, actually. So we always talk on Hype about how I like just kind of, I never really get to do much like real life fandom stuff because I'm in Denmark and Denmark isn't really big on fandom. But this past weekend, Copenhagen Comic Con gathered the nerds and actually gave me a little bit of an outlet for my fandom. So I was attending Copenhagen Comic Con as press primarily to interview the 100-star Richard Harmon. Actually, primarily to interview the 100-star Bob Morley. But he canceled last minute the day before the con because he'd gotten ill. And Richard Harmon, bless his heart, he kind of, it's a funny story, he was telling this as well. He was out to lunch with his friend, who was also an actor, called Lee Majdoub, who you might have seen him on The Magicians. He was the genie, or in Supernatural, he was the angel Hannah. And they were out to lunch, and he got a call, and he was like, can you get on a flight to Copenhagen in 3 hours? And he was like, oh my God, like he was literally just talking about how tired he was to his friend and how he needed a break. And then he said, can I like think about it? And then he thought about it. And then he called back like 2 minutes later and he was like, yes, if my friend Lee comes, then I'll go. So they changed the flight so they could both go, and they got on a plane like literally 2 hours later. They just went from the cafe to the airport, I think. And then they went to Copenhagen for like 3 days, which is hilarious. So I'm just glad that someone from the 100 came, because I was excited to get to do a in-person interview. And Richard is great. I spoke to him a couple of months ago in London. So it was kind of, because Bob Morley, I haven't spoken to him since last season, so I had a lot of questions for him. For Richard, I kind of felt like I already used my best questions, but because I've seen the first 4 episodes of the season, and now you've seen episode 3, you kind of know some of the developments that are happening with Murphy. So I got to get his thoughts on that, you know. So we focused, like last time, I feel like it was more like a general conversation, and this time I focused it a little bit more in on Murphy's particular developments. And like, I think that will be valuable to fans when episode 4 has aired, and we spoke for a good like 20 minutes. So that was good. I was happy to have the chance to do that. And Richard Harmon is always just so nice. Like, he's such a good, professional, sort of polite, very friendly person to talk to. So I thought it was great. And it was really funny because we were put into basically the like VIP guest area to do our interview. We were just sitting where, like, it's going to be a really noisy recording because we were just sitting in like where all the people, like all the guests and all the managers and stuff were talking. And we were just like in a corner of the room. And then after the interview was done, because I was sitting like with my back to all the people, I look back and like, you know, Pilo Asbæk, who is Danish and who is in Game of Thrones, he was like right behind me. And I like been sitting there the whole time. And I was like, oh my God, it's Euron Greyjoy. Oh my gosh. A huge, like, really big Danish actor. We actually went to the same school as well, but so that was fun. So talking to Richard was good, and I am going to be sharing that interview on Hypeable next week. And then, aside from that, honestly, Copenhagen Comic Con, now having been to a couple of Comic Cons at this point, I will say that like layout wise I was a little bit disappointed. I think in 2016 Copenhagen Comic Con, that was the last time it was there, and it was out in a different, much bigger venue, and there was just a lot more space, and there were a lot more different kinds of activities. There were a lot of obviously stalls where you could buy things, but there was also like areas where you can sit and play board games and play video games and stuff like that. And there was that here, but because it was just basically one concert hall, like the other place was like a conference center, so there are different areas and stuff. This one is just literally just one big room. It was just very crowded, and it was very hard to get around, and there wasn't a lot to see. I took my niece and nephew there. My niece is 6 and my nephew is 9. And he had a great time because what I didn't realize when I took him there, I was like, oh, there's going to be like merchandise and cosplayers. What he was there to see were YouTubers. I have no idea who YouTubers are in Denmark, but he found some. He was very happy. He took a bunch of pictures. My niece kind of decided when we walked in that all she wanted was a picture with Wonder Woman, which I figured would be really easy because it was full of cosplayers. But you know what? It turned out there was not a single Wonder Woman cosplayer.
I can't believe that they let you down.
I know. Like, I was so surprised. Like, of all the things, you would think there would be a couple of Wonder Women.
What was, like,
find a Supergirl.
Hmm? What was the most popular, like, female costume you saw then?
Well, we saw a lot of Spider-Men. Like, it was full of Spider-Man. So I think a couple of them were girls. There was a lot of, like, I think anime characters. I actually did see, I saw Lady Sif. That was a great costume. And I saw one who was the girl from How to Train Your Dragon. And I saw a Belle from Beauty and the Beast. And we saw a Daenerys and a Khal Drogo cosplay. That was fantastic. But not too many girls who were dressed up, I don't think. Mostly guys, which is a good, like, if you think of Danish pop culture, it's kind of like the 90s in America at this point. Like, we're a few decades behind, so it's still not acceptable to be a nerd in Denmark, and it's still very much a guy's game, you know? So, like, it's very interesting to observe sort of how Danish people engage with pop culture. But yeah, so I will say the event itself was nothing really too exciting, but interviewing Richard was great. So, and we had wonderful weather, and I got to meet a couple of the 100 fans that I hadn't met before. And I actually, there was a girl there, I'm sure she won't mind me telling the story, that she was there to see Bob and he wasn't there, and she'd flown in from Germany, and then, you know, she was just kind of going to go home. And she was like, but I didn't get to meet Bob and stuff. So me and my brother actually took her on like a guided tour of Copenhagen before she left. Because I was like, well, you can't go home like with such a bad feeling. And like, it's your first time in Copenhagen. Come on. So it turns out that I know a lot about Copenhagen.
I think that that's so sweet. I love that.
Yeah, so I hope she had a good time, because I was like, well, you know, I'm no Bob, but I can do my best. So yeah, so that was my time. That was my weekend. And now it's just over a month away. I'm actually heading to LA to go to ConGeta, the 100 convention. So that's exciting. I can't believe it's so soon.
I know. Yeah, I'm so excited for you to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be great. All right, so moving into the news, we have a bunch of stories to talk about in pop culture. We are going to talk, if you're listening to this because you're like, I want to hear about the 100. We are going to talk about the 100, 503 in TV show of the week, as well as some other TV shows. And we are obviously going to talk about the big news that broke this week. But before that, we have some other stories to get into. The first one in the doc is Captain Marvel. It's just a small... I say as though it's not super great. Casting update that Annette Bening will play Brie Larson's mom. Yay! I love her.
Yeah, she's great. What a great get for them.
And what a great cast. Like, she totally could be Brie Larson's mom.
Oh, yeah.
Like, first of all, she's great, but they also kind of look alike. So it's like a win-win.
It's kind of, you know, it's so fun, I'm sure, for these actors, like these seasoned veterans, to get to do something where, you know, it's probably not super extensive. They know they're not like the main event, but it's still, they get to step into this world, and it's like so fun, you know?
Yeah, yeah. These movies are so incredibly star-studded. It's insane. Like the kind of people they can attract, like Samuel L. Jackson and Michael Douglas and stuff like that. So this is just another great addition, I think.
I totally agree. I can't, you know, like we've talked before about how we don't really know too much about Captain Marvel other than like the basics. So it's going to be really fun to see, you know, these scenes that she ends up sharing with Brie Larson, because it's two amazing actresses and they get to play mother and daughter. So it should be fun.
Yeah, 100%.
So we have another, this is like a pretty big story actually coming up, and this broke earlier this afternoon. John Green is an author of many books, but one of the books that's been optioned for a very long time that has yet to make it to screen is Looking for Alaska. This was published back in 2006, and I feel like it's safe to say it's probably like one of the most popular books that he's written, like based on like his fans, like not necessarily like casual fans, but like people that are fans of John Green. I feel like this is like a fan favorite, wouldn't you say?
Looking for Alaska?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel like this is the one. But unfortunately, you know, this movie is the options rights for this book to turn it into a movie have kind of, they've been around for a while. They've been trying to get it made since like probably not long after it's been published, and things have just kind of fallen out every time. A couple of years ago, they had like two directors attached to it, and like they both dropped out. And John has taken to Twitter before in the past to talk about like falling out with the studio. And so it's kind of looking like this is going to be the project that never came to fruition until this afternoon, when we learned that Hulu has actually picked up Looking for Alaska, not for a movie, but actually for a limited series, which is kind of crazy. So you're not just going to get like a 2-hour adaptation. It's going to be an 8-part limited series that fully tells the story of Pudge and his time at the school that he goes to and his fateful meeting with Alaska Young. And go on. Probably like the most exciting thing about this for me is that they have a showrunner attached, and that's Josh Schwartz, who working on Hulu's Runaways right now, but more importantly is also the man behind such great teenage soap operas like Gossip Girl and The O.C.
Yeah, hello. I know.
How perfect is that? So that's going to be really perfect. Great. I think that he's a great pick. He's been, you know, kind of linked to this for a really long time, so he's definitely played the long game. And if you're a John Green fan, this is super exciting, because this is the adaptation that everybody's been waiting for, and it looks like it's finally in Hulu's lap and they're actually going to do something with it.
I'm so glad I won the Know You competition just now, because my question was going to be, do you think there's any like actual reason or like any meat to the story that warrants it being a miniseries? But now that you said Josh Schwartz is doing it, then I would totally see it now. Like, that sort of changes everything, because I don't necessarily think this is series, like this warrants a series, but I can totally see what Josh Schwartz would do with it.
Definitely
to expand it in this way.
Yeah, totally. I think that like in a lot of ways, this book for me is not my favorite John Green book. I think we've talked before about how like we're not like the best John Green fans. Yeah. But this book specifically was never one I was super excited for the adaptation for. That being said, I know a lot of people like this book means a lot to a lot of people. So that's fine if that's you. But I could not have imagined it as anything other than like maybe an hour and a half movie. Yeah. I feel like there's not a lot of substance there, like for an adaptation, for a big screen adaptation. But you're right, like with Schwartz attached, I mean, he really knows how to let characters breathe, and he knows how to get into the minds of, you know, kids that are growing up and going through growing pains and dealing with other stuff in between that. So I think that he'll add a lot to this for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Staying in exciting TV projects, we have an update on Mindy Kaling's Four Weddings and a Funeral TV series. We learned, I believe it was back in November 2017, we first learned that she was developing it. And now it has been officially picked up by Hulu. So she's going to be adapting the classic Richard Curtis rom-com, Four Weddings and a Funeral, starring Hugh Grant and what was her name? Andy McDowell. Andy! Yes, starring Hugh Grant and Andy McDowell. And she will be developing it into a limited series as well. It's going to be 10 episodes. No, that's just season one. So it's going to be probably a lot of episodes. And she will be updating it with a diverse cast, which is fantastic. And she says that she'll be taking it into the 21st century, which is going to be fun. This is a really fun. I like Four Weddings and a Funeral. Richard Curtis is great. He's like the king of rom-coms. He was the one who did Love Actually and Bridget Jones's Diary as well. Yes,
and Notting Hill, which is like one of my favorites.
Yes. So basically all the movies with Hugh Grant
You know what's so funny is I feel like, I mean, and rightly so, like we should all like be obsessed with Nancy Myers because she's amazing. But Richard Curtis is also a really big name. And I feel like we forget him a lot, you know, rom-com fans anyway.
Because he's British.
That's true.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, it's actually, he's great. And Mindy Kaling is great. And she's so good at, like, if you just look at the Mindy Project, like, she's so good at the modern rom-com. You know, she really has a great style for that. I like her a lot. So I'm excited to see what she does with Four Weddings and a Funeral. And I think just the story, how fragmented it is, how it kind of follows. It already is kind of like, because Richard Curtis is good, too, because he kind of makes ensemble movies. He was kind of the one who invented ensemble movies, really. So I think that just taking that onto a TV series format is such a like natural fit. And there's so many ways. They could even just take the original movie and expand the people's stories and it would work as a series. So like, I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited.
Me too. And I think that you hit the nail on the head with this idea that, or just like with the fact that Mindy Kaling is so good at the modern rom-com. And I think that that's why so many people gravitate to her shows, because, you know, if you long for that nostalgia of like the 90s rom-coms, which like people don't really make anymore. I think the last like good 90s-esque rom-com I saw was The First Time with Dylan O'Brien and
Robertson. Yes.
Yeah, it was very much along that vein. Maybe Easy A too. I can't remember which of those came out first or second. But yeah, it's kind of like a lost art almost. And I'm so excited to see what she does with it. And I know that she's promised to kind of like, you know, stay true to the original, but also bring it into the 21st century with a more diverse cast and stuff like that. And I think that diversity kind of leans to like different ways to tell stories. And it's a good fit. I love this.
Yes, totally.
Well, here's some more exciting TV news for you guys. If you, like me, are a big fan of Starz's Outlander series, we learned today that Outlander season 4 will be premiering in November 2018. So it's like kind of far off, but not too bad because time tends to move pretty quickly around this time of year. But even more exciting, we also learned via Starz today that they have greenlit the series for season 5 and season 6. So it got a double season renewal, which is super exciting because that means we get more Jamie and Claire for a few more years to come. So the next season of Outlander, which premieres later on this winter, is going to be 13 episodes, and it's going to be based on Drums of Autumn, which is the fourth book in Diana Gabaldon's series. But then seasons 5 and 6, which are based off of The Fiery Cross and A Breath of Snow and Ashes, will be a little bit shorter, but only by one episode, so they're going to be 12 episodes each. This is really exciting, though, and like Outlander is so great, and it's like just aesthetically very beautiful. But yeah, really big fan of this show, and I'm really excited for it to come back, and I'm excited to hear that we get more.
I really like the way they're doing Outlander. I think that, you know, because it's one of those series like Sherlock as well, which also we learned, by the way, that that is coming back that's the movie. Wait, never mind. I take that back. But but like Sherlock and like even Game of Thrones, where it's shorter seasons and you have to wait a long time in between, I feel like the one that does it best is kind of Outlander. I feel like they're quite good at, I mean, obviously Game of Thrones is a bigger, different phenomenon, but I think no matter how long it takes between seasons, like I keep seeing people be excited. There's kind of like a low hum of excitement at all times for Outlander, which is really impressive that they managed to maintain that, you know? So yeah. I think this is great. I'm really happy for fans.
Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes they take little breaks. They do like season, like one part of the season, and then they take a little break and then they do the next part. So they have like kind of their own version of the mid-season finale. They have in the past anyway. So I think that that definitely helps drum up excitement, especially for a shorter season.
Yeah.
You know, 12 episodes is not very long. And we've talked before about how like The 100 specifically, it's like 12 weeks of crazy, you know, all in one go. And then Outlander, in contrast, is a little bit more about the slow burn, but it does get more exciting. And I think that, like, also a lot of that has to do not necessarily just, like, with how passionate the fan base is, but also how active and passionate, like, the actors are about the show. Like, Katrina Balfi and Sam Heughan specifically, who play Jamie and Claire, they're just so great on Twitter and on Instagram and like with connecting with fans, which is something that we talk about a lot. Like it takes a really special person to like not be scared of how passionate, you know, fandoms can be online. And I just really applaud people that can play that game and like very genuinely kind of relate to these people that love the thing that you're making. So
yes, 100%. That is a good point.
So we've talked a little bit about exciting news. Now we have a little bit of sad TV news. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is actually gearing up to return to Netflix, but it's also coming with a bit of a sad note because we learned just last week that season 4 is going to be the show's last, which is kind of interesting because this is coming on the heels of the big season 4 premiere, which comes out on Wednesday, May 30th. But we're still going to get one more chapter of Kimmy's story because the plan right now is for Netflix to tie up any loose ends with a movie finale, which will also be written by Tina Fey, which of course created the actual show. So kind of sad news, but I'm sure that they're going to pull out all the stops for this last season and also for the movie, whatever that might entail. It's kind of hard to predict what that might entail just because we haven't seen what happens in this next season. This next season actually is going to be split up into two parts. This is kind of like Netflix's new thing, I've noticed. So the first part, which is going to be 6 episodes, will come out again on Wednesday, May 30th. I think I got that day wrong, actually. It's probably Friday, May 30th. And then they'll release the back half at a later date.
Cool. Well, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Kimmy Schmidt. Like, the first episode season was okay. The second season, I could not get through 2 episodes. So I think this is sort of, it's good that they're wrapping it up properly. That's kind of how I always feel with shows. Like, as long as they get the ending they want, then it almost doesn't matter how much we get.
That's true. Yeah. I think that as a fan of anything, that's all you can really ask for is this planned ending. You know, it always kind of sucks when the plug gets pulled before a show has time to wrap things up, so.
And, you know, that kind of ties into our final news story this week that I chose to put last because it'll lead into a TV show of the week, which is The 100, which is not ending anytime soon, you guys, because it's official. It has been renewed for season 6. Yay!
Yay!
I'm so happy. There was absolutely no question that it would be, but I'm happy it's official. You know, it's so funny with this announcement. Let's just tell a little weird anecdote that it was made public at 3 a.m. my time, so I was sleeping, which is not always the case at 3 a.m., but it was in this particular situation. Because, of course, like, Hypebeable does not, like, get these kinds of exclusives ever, so whatever. But it was made public, I believe. It was TV Line who got the exclusive, and I woke up to my timeline just celebrating. I mean, so happy. I got up to a message from someone going like, I can't wait for you to see this. You're going to be so happy. My instinct was, oh, crap. Because I missed it. I was like, for fuck's sake. Like, I'm a huge fan, but The 100 is also, like, my job. So I was obviously happy. But my first reaction was, damn it. Why was I not awake? Then I went to Hypebeable and saw that the most wonderful human being named Pam, who is here with me today, had written up the story. And I was so relieved. Oh my God, you have no idea. Like, you just saved The 100 season 6 renewal for me because
I saved The 100. We'll go with that.
You saved The 100.
Single-handedly.
I was like, I'm obviously so happy, but to be completely frank with you all, I kind of knew, so I was not, you know, relieved as much as I was just happy it was finally officially official. So for me, it was more a question of like the news, the journalist in me was like, damn it, you know, why at 3 a.m.?
Do you know what's so funny though?
But I was so happy about it.
Yeah, well, you know what's so funny about that is that, like, so the Hypebeable now, we've moved into the 21st century, you guys. We communicate via Slack, like all big editorial companies do. And
I haven't. I'm still in the 20th.
I know. I'm on Facebook. but like, people started posting this in our Slack group being like, oh my God. And then I was like, I'm on it. But then I had to, like, double and triple check to make sure that this was actually new news, because we had talked about it and talked about how it was like a shoo-in. So I was like convinced that they had made it official like at least a week or two ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be like the idiot that wrote up like the, of course, news story, you know, like the news is not really news. So, yeah. So then I like, but thankfully, like it was a really quick check. I just went over to Twitter and looked up like, you know, just looked on the official Twitter account and I was like, okay, great, great. This is new. This is fine. This is new, but it's not really new. And yeah, I'm excited though. It's good. It's just nice to have official confirmation, and was not the case with some other CW entities. Like we kind of knew that they were waiting to announce like the back half of the renewals. And I know that like, what was it? Life Sentence. And also, Life Sentence is the big one. The one with Lucy Hale did not get renewed. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have a comment on that in our listener feedback, but yeah, it's Valor and Life Sentence, I think, got cut. And it's interesting, the CW, just, you know, even beyond the 100, I know it's hard, but there is a world out there. And it's so, I really appreciate the CW's loyalty to its shows. You know, I've talked a lot about how it's really staying on brand for the CW. What I think a lot of people don't realize, even though it's not a secret, is that ratings matter very little to the CW. You know, they have some deals in place with Warner Brothers and with Netflix and stuff like that. And those are the deals that matter in terms of how they make their money. Also advertising and tie-ins and stuff like that. It's ratings is such a small part of it. So they, whenever people look at the CW's ratings and go, oh my God, it's doing terribly, it's not, because it's kind of, it has a different model that I think, honestly, it's probably the network that is doing the smartest work just in terms of surviving falling ratings and increased power of the streaming sites. I have a feeling that the CW is probably one of the ones that are going to come out on top. And while people weren't looking, they have also been making amazing new shows that are so much beyond the typical CW shows that you would imagine, like The 100 and like Black Lightning and like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and like Jane the Virgin and stuff like that. And what I also love, kind of like we were saying with Kimmy Schmidt, is that they usually allow their series to end in the way they want. Aside from the new shows that kind of are on the chopping block in their first year, once they go past their first year, they've earned kind of brand loyalty, and they are usually announced, like a final season is usually announced for the people involved and for the fans. I think the only one that didn't get it was Rain, which still had time. Like they were told they were ending halfway through their season, and so they got like to write a proper send-off for it. But other than that, so what is like exciting for me about this news is that it's not announced as a final season, because you would assume that a show like The 100, when it ends, will be announced with a final season, that it'll get that courtesy. That doesn't mean this is not, like, it could still be the final season, because we could still be getting an announcement like that. But I'm confident that when it is the final season, eventually, we will get an announcement. Like, it won't be like The 100 season ends on a big cliffhanger and then the CW is like, that's it. That's all, folks, you know, bye. So I'm happy with the promise of more. I'm happy that we're getting a season 6. I'm really excited. I have a feeling that the end of season 5 is going to blow your mind. So I think it's really good that there's going to be a season 6. And I also think that, considering how good season 5 is and how it almost feels like The 100 is finally living up to its full potential, not that I didn't like it before, but it feels like season 5 is like they finally nailed it. Like they finally got exactly what they've been trying to do all along. I think that this show still has a couple of good seasons in it. And I obviously, any show can get tired, and any show can begin to lose its way. But I think The 100 is probably one of the few shows that doesn't feel like it's doing that. And I think one of the reasons why is because it's not afraid of, like, there's no status quo on 100. You know, unlike a show like The Vampire Diaries, which always had to reset itself to a certain extent every season, and there was always going to be like a Mystic Falls. Like, The 100 doesn't have that. The 100 obliterates The 100 obliterates its sets and its story designs, and it tells sort of similar stories of morality and you know, human nature and us versus them and stuff like that every season, but it does it in new and exciting ways and changes up dynamics and changes power positions and changes perspectives every season, which I think helps keep it really fresh. So I'm so happy, and congratulations to everyone involved, and congratulations to the fans, because this is good. I'm happy.
Good. It's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
Good.
Yes. So, I mean, let's just move into the TV show of the week, because we were talking about The 100. So we have both watched the third episode of the fifth season, Sleeping Giants. Pam just finished before we hopped on Skype. So I'm curious, what did you think, Pam?
Oh my God, this episode was so good. Can we, like, is this like spoiler fine?
Yeah,
like,
all okay. The spoilers, so you're fine.
Cool. Yeah, I was telling Selena, I don't know why I'm consistently surprised by this, but I just really appreciate that there are so many shows out there that really, like, slow burn things for no reason. And I just really appreciate that The 100 isn't one of them, because they know they have 13 episodes and there's no time to waste, you know? Yes. So I don't know why I was surprised, but I was, like, genuinely, like pleasantly surprised that it didn't take, you know, six more episodes for most of Space Crew to make it down to the ground. And that last scene specifically, which is what I'm sure, like, all of Twitter is abuzz about, is kind of just crazy, you know?
Yes. Yes.
But yeah. And also, like, now all we have is, like, Murphy and Raven up in space.
I know.
It's going to be so crazy.
Yes, it is.
And all of these parts are, like, moving, and everybody's kind of inching closer and closer together. And we're, like, learning more about this, like, army of people that are crazy.
What do you think about the newcomers?
I mean, like, I think that, like in all groups of people, there's good and bad, you know?
Yes.
But I'm curious to find out, what's the commander's name?
Dioza.
Dioza. I am, like, kind of curious to find out a little bit more about her, because right now she's very, like, cut and dry and super cutthroat.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming we're going to learn more about her backstory and, like, why she is the way she is. So.
Yeah. I think I'm curious about that, for sure. All of them. Mm-hmm. I really love them. I keep sort of hyping them up in my reviews and stuff, because I think that, honestly, they're probably, like, The 100 does not have a villain problem, because, and it doesn't even really have villains, but I feel like of all of the antagonists that The 100 has ever had, the religious people are immediately the most interesting to me and the most fleshed out. And I think, again, this is a way in which The 100 is learning from itself. Each season, it's doing a better job than the previous season of some of the same core themes and dynamics. And the prisoners, and especially those three leads, Dioza and Zeke Shaw and McCreary, are so interesting to me. All three of them, and they're so different, and you can tell that there's so much history between the three of them together as well. And you can tell that there's so many, like, inter-dynamics at play within Eligius that is going to be interesting in and of itself, like, not even thinking about how they're going to relate to the people that we actually know and like, right? So I love them. And I think this episode did such a good job of fleshing them out. And everything I see of them, I'm just, I love them even more and find them even more interesting. Even McCreary, who is, like, clearly the most evil man in the world. I know you just mentioned that The 100 kind of moves really fast. And that's one of the things I really love about it as well, because I think that's why because it's not afraid. Like, you can tell it's a mark of a good story where it's not keeping, like, a sort of a quote-unquote, like, cheap like set up and pay off. It's not stretching it out too much, because something like the separation of Bellamy and Clark, you would think that they would kind of be milking that more, because it is kind of a, was a huge thing in the finale. The separation of these two characters in particular is a big deal. And so, yeah, you might think there would be a couple of like near misses, or they would reunite some of the other characters first or something like that. I really love that they didn't. I really love that they're like, the point of their story is not to like make cheap drama by separating them and following their separation until they get back together. It's, we have a lot of story to tell. You know, we can't just meander around this little thing when we have so much plot. And I love that. Are you, how do you stand on Bellamy and Clark? Are you a shipper?
I really go back and forth on that, honestly. Like, there are moments that they share that really kind of tug at my heartstrings, because they're there to do that. But, like, just, like, my feelings on Bellamy in general, like, my, I really go back and forth on whether or not I like him. And I think that that's okay, because he's not meant to be perfect, you know? All of these characters, they make mistakes. So I feel like I enjoy Bellamy more when he's being like good Bellamy, but he falls off the rails a lot. And that's kind of when I hate him. And I'm like, Clark deserves better, you know?
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, kind of.
I don't
Not
know.
Really. I just, like Bellamy.
Shipping is kind of like the last thing on my brain with the 100 usually. So it's hard to, I don't like,
I will say,
because there's just like some, like with Bellamy, like I like, I want to love him all of the time, but there have been times that I've really been upset with him, you know, like in season two, or like even in the beginning of season one, when everyone was like, oh, but Bellamy this and Bellamy that. And I'm like, this guy's a jerk. Like, why are you guys obsessed? I don't get it. And then you start to get it. And that's nice. But,
you know, I always, I see what you mean. I think that's like a general sentiment in fandom. I always really liked Bellamy. I there was no point, like in season three, obviously, with the massacre of the army, which kind of made an interesting return in this episode when they were talking about killing 300 people as well, and he didn't want to do it.
But that's a bargaining chip. That's different.
Yes, it is. It is. But I think that that decision is obviously one of the things fans really like to talk about and debate, and I was on the side that was like, yeah, I know it was rushed and stuff, but I see it from his perspective. I understand. So I never had to overcome any like, no, Bellamy, why? But I think regardless, I think this is really his season. You know, I think you can already kind of see he and Clark obviously have kind of switched roles, in that who is the reasonable one who is able to use both his head and his heart, and who is the like instinct driven, almost vindictive, sort of really sort of kill or be killed, us versus them person. And this season it's Clark. And I love that. I think that the scene in this episode when she's like torturing that guy and like basically being a horrible person because she sees them as enemies now and she will do whatever she can to say, to keep Maddie safe. I think that tells you so much about who Clark has become and how their priorities have shifted. And that's the thing that I do ship and I do love shipping and stuff, but I think that's what's interesting to me about the show is I'm like, oh my God, they've switched roles. What's going to happen? Like, they're huge, emotionally powerful reunion. They mean so much to each other. What is that going to mean when it comes to finding
Bellamy
a way
and Echo
to... No, Bellamy like, and Clark.
No. I mean, like, isn't he like dating Echo? Aren't they? Isn't that a thing?
Sure.
Yeah, but like that's the other thing too. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of different elements there. No.
Then it's just an obstacle for you.
No, of course. Like, there's like obstacles for them too in the show, though. That's what I was kind of like.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, there's so much, and that's kind of, I love that too. Like, how there's so many intricate dynamics at play, because it's not just Bellamy and Clark. It's Bellamy and Octavia. You know, it's Clark and Octavia. It's Echo and Bellamy. It's Echo
emotions,
and Clark. It's
emotions
Raven.
Run high on the 100. Yeah, always
they do.
Yeah.
And it's about the relationships. Like, shipping is one part, and family is another part. And, you know, found family is a huge theme of this season with space crew and everything. Oh, my God. How much did you love Imori in this episode?
Oh, my God. 1,000 times yes.
I love Imori. She might be, like, my absolute favorite character.
She's great. And Raven is great, too. I'm so happy that we got more of her this season. Like, I always love spending time with her. And she's just, like, so smart. And, like, I don't know how they're going to survive without her. down on the ground, honestly, because a deus ex machina does not exist in the 100, but if it did, it would take the form of Raven Reyes. Like, that's, you know.
It's true.
That's your get shit done girl. Like, she's going to save your ass.
She's going to find a way. Yes.
Yeah.
Raven and I'm really, finds a way.
Really interested to see how that dynamic plays out between her and Murphy now that they're both up there by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited. I'm really excited for that storyline. I really like them, like their dynamic as well.
Me too. Yeah. I've always enjoyed them in the past seasons too. So it's going to be interesting to explore that more now that everybody's a little bit older.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you want us to say? Is there anything else you're excited about?
That's the big thing. I mean, like, obviously, like, just seeing how everybody continues to interact with Maddie, too, is going to be really interesting because, you know, she's kind of like the fresh meat down there.
Yeah.
On top of, you know, just basically in terms of who's important to Clark at this point. So,
yeah,
you know, it's like her new family and her old family meeting. So,
yeah. I really like Maddie. I think that she is such an interesting character. I got the chance to speak to Lola Flannery, who plays her, just this past week. And she's so sweet. And she's so excited about the show. And she's a huge fan. I think she's 12 or 13. And she's a huge fan of the show. And I'm like, but I guess I get it.
I love it when that happens. That time.
Yeah. But it's so violent, you know, it's so scary. But she's really cool. And I think Maddie is such a, I've been so happy to see what an independent and individual character she is. She's not just an extension of Clark. She's not just a plot point for Clark. She's really very much her own person, running around saving people in the forest. Clearly, you know, she's a Nightblood. She's hiding under the floor. Clearly, there's going to be something with Octavia down the line. And I just cannot wait to see where her story goes. So I love that. I love that they added Maddie to the show. I love every, like, they're so good at adding new characters, I think.
And it feels natural, too. Like, they never feel out of place or just, like, put in there for, like, a lot of times I feel like shows add new faces because it's gotten stale and they need to shake things up. And that's not the case here. Like, everybody serves a purpose and that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I love it. I love it so much. And what did you think about, just briefly, last week's episode? Because we didn't get to talk about that.
Oh, my God. You know, like, your BFF Sachin said that we weren't ready for the bunker. And he was right. I didn't think it was going to be that violent. That's crazy. It's literally, like, it's like controlled anarchy down there.
Yes. Yeah.
But it was really interesting to see, get the backstory of Octavia's rise to power.
Yeah. It was really surprising, too. Mm-hmm.
It was. I didn't think it was going to be that bloody, but she's living up to her new name.
Yeah. But I love it. I think we got to see some of her emotion. People were really scared ahead of the season that she was just going to jump straight to Blood Rayna and just be this black and white villain. But we really got to see into her emotional struggle with it. We really got to see her touch base with sort of the season one Octavia, who was just like, why don't you just like give the blankets back? What's happening?
Yeah.
So I thought that was really important for us to remind ourselves of who she is as a human being before we get to see her as what she's become. For me, the episode was just like overshadowed because everyone who knows me knows that I was a massive fan of Jaha, and Maxon is my OTP. So for me, this episode was just like insane because Jaha died, but Maxon pissed like 10 minutes later. Rip Jaha, yeah. So it was like basically the two, like the best and the worst thing that happened. And I like had no idea how to feel, and I had to sit on those emotions for weeks.
And I am not a Jaha lover, but even I felt bad.
Yeah. They wrote him off really well.
They did.
It was a good death. It was the show's best death, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And we lived through Finn's death, and that was equally terrible, so.
It's true. Oh, my gosh. All right, so I think that's enough the 100 discussion for now. We will keep watching and talking about it as the season goes on. We should try to do a special at some point. We have a lot of special plans. We'll figure that out.
Interesting that you mentioned that because I have a friend that just started watching for the first time.
Oh, my gosh, that's so fun.
So maybe I should see how far she's in and rope her into this weird spoiler, not spoiler thing that we've got going on.
Yeah, maybe. That would be fun.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about yours, and I'll briefly talk about Handmaid's
Yes, Tale. I want to talk very quickly about Netflix's Dear White People, because it's officially back for season 2. It's actually going under the name Dear White People Volume 2. If you've not seen this show, oh my God, it's so amazing. It was based off of a movie of the same name, and the show kind of deals with the same premise. It centers, it's kind of an anthology because, like, all of the main characters kind of get their moment in the sun, so to speak. But the first character you meet, your main character, is a girl named Sam, and she's half black and half white, and that's important because the whole show deals with race and race relations and stuff like that. And it all takes place on this college campus of Winchester, and it's very, it's kind of like an Ivy League school. And she hosts this college radio show called Dear White People, where she talks about, things like cultural appropriation to, like, race relations and oppression and things like that. And it's a very, like, radicalized show. So in the first season, we kind of got a deep dive into all of these characters and how, like, you know, I feel like something, it's very easy to lump minorities into one category. So if you're, like, you're black, but not all black people are the same, just like not all white people are the same, for example. Like, everybody's different. And so it's just a very interesting character study into the what makes up, you know, black America, be it, like, you know, people that are half, like, mixed race, like Sam, or there is also a character named Coco, who's one of my favorites, and she's kind of, like, learned to put on this facade of, like, a very proper, like, almost, like, white acting black person so she can get ahead. And yeah, so it's just, like, really, really great. And the second season is so, so, so good. And also dealing, like, similarly to the, like, how The Bold Type is, like, really cutting edge in terms of telling stories that are, you know, happening now, you know, weaving in stories that are happening now. The second season of Dear White People does the exact same thing. Like, race relations aside, it also deals a lot with, like, online trolling and, like, Twitter. And it's just, oh my God, it's so, so good. There's, like, an abortion storyline that's really compelling too. I can't say enough good things about this show. It's so, so, so amazing and definitely worth your time. So,
yeah.
Yes, please go watch
it. I love it a lot. I've only seen about half of season one, but it's so good. It's really compelling and really interesting. And I liked how it followed different characters. And some characters, like, I think, are more compelling than other characters. But I really like Sam. I really like that story. So,
yeah, she's really great. And God, sometimes, like, this show, like, is, you know, it's a little later for me, so I forget, like, character names and stuff like that. But, like, she's with this guy named, I think, Noah in the first season, and it's mm-hmm. a big deal because, like, they're kind of sneaking around because he's white, and it kind of takes away from this persona that she's got going on. And I'm sure a lot of that stems, well, you learn later that a lot of that stems too from, like, the idea of being, like, black enough when you're mixed race, you know, like, you can't really win and stuff like that. So there's, like, so many layers to the show, and if you like it when we talk about, you know, kind of how, like, all this intersects with pop culture, like, this is the show for you. It's great.
Yeah. And then finally, in TV show of the week, I also just wanted to shout out The Handmaid's Tale season 2 that I'm watching, and I'm trying to stay up to date on it. I think I said last week or the week before that I thought I was going to save the whole season to watch it at once, but now I kind of, like, can't help whenever there's a new episode out. I'm like, okay, let's do this, even though I'm also like, oh my God, no, because it's so horrible. At the end of last week's episode, which I believe was episode 3, something happened that just made me so sad and so mad, because one of the most frustrating things, not just in The Handmaid's Tale, but in TV shows in general, is when you spend some time with a character almost getting somewhere, and then their circumstances revert. And that's what happened to June in that episode. And I could not. Oh, it was like, The Handmaid's Tale walks a really fine line of being grating in a way that you can watch and grating in a way that is, like, too grim for you to really be able to stomach it. And I think it walked the line of that. But then actually the episode after, episode 4, Other Women, was really good. Like, I think they handled her circumstances fairly well. It wasn't, I mean, it was frustrating, and it was demeaning, and it was belittling, and it was just took power away from her in such an extreme way. But I think they could have done it in a worse way than they did. So I appreciate that. I really appreciate the way it plays with characters in positions of power and how they enforce that power and why they enforce that power. And what, like, Aunt Lydia is a huge part of this season. And it's just, End Out does such a great job in the role. And it's just so interesting. There's so many layers to why she does what she does and how she enforces power of these girls and stuff like that. So I think I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying season two. I was worried it was going to be too dreary or like repeating itself. But I think it's really good so far. And I'm not totally, like, my hope for humanity hasn't totally been lost yet. So that's a good sign. I don't know if you're watching it yet. I don't want to be too specific in case you're not, but
I haven't. I really want to, though.
But yeah, you should.
I really like to, like, it's so weird because this is not like a bingeable show at all, but I just really get really anxious when I don't know what's going to happen next on The Handmaid's Tale. So maybe it's good that I'll have a couple episodes to go through when I sit down to get around to it. Yeah,
for sure. And that's really the TV shows that we wanted to talk about this week. And we're going to move into listener feedback. We have just a couple of tweets and an email. So if you want to get the tweet from Laura Morrow.
Yes, Laura says, I just found out that Life Sentence won't get a second season. I'm rather sad. I really liked the show. So this is the Lucy Hale one, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry for your loss, Laura, but I got to admit that I couldn't sit through the pilot of this. Which is too bad. I really could. I couldn't get through the first 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, like, again, it's funny with the CW, like, how its new shows are very much, like, at risk, I think. But once they make it past their first year, they're safe forever. So, but I'm sorry. I'm really sorry for you. I really hope that Roswell gets picked up, but I guess we won't know yet. Chanel says, just a follow-up on last week, she was going to Wizard World, and unfortunately, she didn't get to hear all of Pam's amazing recommendations, aka frozen butterbeer, in time. Luckily, she found that on her own. So she said, oh my god, Hype just heard my question on the podcast. It was last weekend. I made a list and did all the things and got picked for the wand experience for my birthday. Best birthday ever. P.S. Frozen butterbeer was better. That's so cool. I'm so happy. I don't know how that works, but I'm glad you got picked.
I feel like they just pick you at random. It's like low-key my dream, but also like I've only been like twice, so which I know is twice more than you've gone, so can't complain too much, but yeah.
I'm so glad you had a good time, and thank you for writing in and letting us know and sharing a picture. It was really cool.
Oh my god, I know. Her picture was so cute. I'm so glad you had a good birthday.
Yeah. And do you want to get our email? This is, by the way, this is for an Avengers Infinity War. We did say last week that we were going to talk about it. So this does contain spoilers. So if you have not yet seen Infinity War, then goodbye. We'll see you next week.
I love that. All right. You've been warned. So Elizabeth writes, hello, ladies. Sorry, I haven't emailed in a while. I've been super busy at work, but I've been listening to and hearing Selena talk about Infinity War had me shaking. I was shaking with anticipation because this movie was amazing and it was absolutely tragic. I'm not even going to mention the first 10 minutes of this film or the last 20. So let's talk about the happy things. Thor was featured so much in this film and I couldn't be happier. I feel like in the past he hasn't played a huge part in these ensemble films and I'm glad he was able to do more in this one. Thor and the Guardians meshed so well together and their lines were some of the funniest in the film. Now let's talk ladies. Hello, Gamora just killed it. Sorry. Aww. In the film. I actually really enjoyed seeing her backstory and how her and Thanos formed a relationship. And lastly, can we just have a movie featuring Black Widow, Scarlet Witch, and Okoye? That scene made my life. Thanks for reading and please share more thoughts. P.S. Have you seen the memes online about no context Infinity War spoilers? They are to die for. Oh my god. My favorite was, you know, the Met Gala was this past weekend and Frances McDormand showed up in this elaborate, she had this like elaborate feather headdress thing on. And somebody paired that with the caption of, like, I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark, because it looks like she, because the feathers are, like, triangle-shaped, and it does kind of look like she's slowly withering away.
That's so funny.
Corner. I was like, that's great.
Oh, my gosh. That, yeah, I have seen those. They are hilarious.
Did you also see, there was a really good Titanic-themed one. Did you see that one? That one was really great, too.
No, I didn't see that one.
It's like old Rose, and she's like, after all this time, Jack, and she's got, you know, the heart of the diamond, and then the last, like, picture is her superimposed onto Thanos' body.
No, I didn't see that. So oh, yeah, no, wait, I think I did see that. That's, yes, oh my gosh, that's so funny. I remember a Harry Potter one, which is just, like, Harry, like, reaching for the stone, and, like, Voldemort disintegrating, and, like, and something else, like, wards around Hogwarts going down on one more. And I was like, ah, I get it. Yes, same movie. It's really funny.
It's always nice when you see something in time to catch all the memes.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, but she's right, though, about Elizabeth says about Black Widow, Scarlet Witch, and Okoye. I would also throw Nebula in there. And then that would be, like, my dream team.
I'm really excited to see, like, in the next movie, her and Tony. You know, that dynamic.
God, yes.
Yeah, because they're
and,
so,
I don't care about Iron Man, but, yeah.
Yeah, but like, imagining Nebula.
She's going to make it interesting.
With Iron Man.
Yes. Right.
So like, it's literally... I guess they're both kind of made of iron, but also, like, you know, she's not going to take any of his crap, so.
Yeah. That's kind of funny because it's so, like, not to make it about the 100 again, but one of my favorite things about the 100 is how unexpectedly it pairs characters up and how well that works. And it's so good at reconfiguring its cast. That's one of the reasons why it doesn't get boring. And I think with Infinity War, I think some of the choices they made were, like, I wasn't a hugely fan of them, mostly because, again, I'm not a huge fan of Guardians of the Galaxy, so anything involving them, I'm like, meh. But I think that team up that they're hinting at will be a thing with Nebula and Iron Man is, like, a stroke of absolute genius, and I did not see it coming. So I love that. And I think I'm going to be really interested to see, because we know that the original Avengers all made it, you know, which was obviously, like we talked about in a spoiler cast, that's likely what the last film will be a reunion of the original Avengers to save the new Avengers. So we have Black Widow, and we have the Hulk, and we have Thor, and we have Iron Man, and we have Captain America, and probably we have Hawkeye as well. But what I am super stoked to see is how the new characters that survived will play into it, because Nebula and Okoye and M'Baku? What is his name? Is
it M'Baku, yeah.
M'Baku, yeah. And I'm blanking now, but there's a couple of other, like, smaller, Rocket is there as well, and just a couple of side characters that might actually have a chance to really step up and take on bigger roles. There's people talking about how this might be a way for Marvel to sort of enter its, like, ultimate universe, to introduce Miles Morales as Spider-Man, to introduce Shuri as the new Black Panther, at least for, like, a short amount of time until they get the originals back. So I'm really, really stoked for that. I'm so happy. Like, I think it shows so much promise when you look at the characters they chose to erase and the characters they chose to keep. I know I've already said this, but I'm just, like, I'm still really floored by how much I liked that decision, how smart it felt. Like, how they could have just, like, I would have been so mad if they'd used this opportunity to erase some original Avengers, and then they were just gone forever, and, like, conveniently, this is how they enter a new phase. But instead, like, the way they chose to do it and the characters they chose to keep around to potentially expand their roles and weave them in with the original team, I'm really, really, really stoked for this movie. And I might be setting my sights way too high, but I just have such a good feeling. And it's, like, almost all of my favorite people.
That's pretty good. Almost all your favorite people.
Yeah, like, Thor is there, and Captain America is there, and Nebula is there.
Bucky's gone, but
and
he'll
Okoye,
be back.
Well, that's true. I said almost.
Yes, that was the almost. Can't have Bucky everything. Was the almost.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, yeah, I'm really excited to see how they kind of patch things up. And
I am as well.
Yeah, I guess we'll see in a few years.
Yeah, I guess. We'll be back in 2020
to talk
more. All right, so that was it for our listener feedback. We would love to hear what you guys have to say, whether it's Avengers or The 100 or movies or TV show or books or whatever you want to talk about. If you want to give us your thoughts on Childish Gambino's This Is America or anything like that, then please let us know. You can tweet us at Hypable Hype. Once again, that's at Hypable Hype. And you can send us an email, which is hype@hypable.com. You can also visit us on Hypable, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com or on Instagram at Hypable Hype. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us on both the podcast app on Apple and on Spotify. So please do that. And if you want to leave us a review on there as well, that would we would really appreciate that. 5-star review really helps with the ratings. So if you've got a second to do that, then please do. And I totally forgot to give the Patreon information at the top of the show, but I will do that here. You can find us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/hypepodcast. If you sign up for $2 a month, you get a weekly bonus discussion as well as 2 videos a month and some Merlin bonus content that we will be getting back to. We need to set a time to talk Merlin again because now, like, it's kind of ish a little bit less stressful just now, like right at this very moment when I'm saying those words. So so we can probably squeeze in a Merlin discussion fairly soon. And we will be filling you in on some giveaway details. We just have to work them out. But that information is all over on Hype Podcasts on Tumblr.com. No, oh my gosh. Patreon.com/hypepodcast. So see you over there. Until next week, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed and we hope to hear from you for our next show. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Do you think that This Is America kind of sounds like mi gente in or mi gente? How do you say it? Like in
mi
like
gente?
Do 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 do, like a little bit in the beat?
Maybe I haven't. I mean, I think I've just been so like, there's so much to unpack there that I haven't really like
listened
to the back. I think it's really like melodic, and it's very interesting the way that he plays with melody. But I haven't like.
Yeah, I was just because it's like a Zumba song, so I like have it in my head, and then I was like, "This is America," and I was like, "Hold on, like,
let me play it really quick."
It's like literally does not matter.
Okay, well, came into my head. You can bring that up, and I'll just be like, "I don't know,"
but I don't know how to say gente, so it's embarrassing.
But you said it right, mi gente.
Oh, okay, then we're good.
Yeah.